a beautiful Thursday evening. The clock says it's 7:30 p.m., which means it's time for this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, joining you live from our studios in Prashanthi Nilayam. Well, we may be separated by distance, but we are united by technology. And more than technology, we are united by intent. The intent to please Swami with our deeds, to progress on the spiritual path, and to find Swami's ways of resolving the problems we face in life, isn't it? Just yesterday, I received a mail from a listener in Germany who is saying, it is fascinating how, though we all belong to different cultures and countries, the problems we face seem to be so similar. And what is more fascinating is, Swami has solutions for all our problems. So true, isn't it? The solutions are actually simple, but most often we need to persevere with them. Another question that I often get asked by listeners is whether I make up some of the questions that I feature on the show. That's because the questions are so profound and cover so many different aspects of life, isn't it? Well, honestly, I have never made up any questions so far on the show, never had the need to. I have not even had the need to modify a question. So the credit for this show covering so many aspects of life purely goes to the listeners who have been sending such good questions to the answering booth. What about the answers? Well, the answers are drawn from Swami's message, no doubt. But as I always say, these answers are merely pointers. My answer will be found only by me, within me. Your answers will be found only by you, within yourself. But I hope you all will agree with me that this journey of marching together in exploration of answers has been an enjoyable one. So with humble salutations to Swami, the one who binds all of us together, though we are so different and unique otherwise, let us begin this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. I have another interesting question I'll be addressing today. It's a very general question, not relating to any event or situation as such. So my answer too is going to be general, and hopefully it's going to be applicable to more of us. But wait, it's not yet time for the question or the answer, right? For I'm yet to inflict upon you a quote that has caught my attention. So here comes the quote for this week. It's from an American investor and statesman, Bernard Baruch. I quote, "Be who you are and say what you feel. Because those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind." End of quote. Well, I should say that I only partially agree with this quote, or rather I need to qualify certain things before I speak about this quote. The statement, be who you are and say what you feel like, it's not a license to the mind for anarchy. I would say, as Swami instructs us, use the discrimination to ascertain what is right and wrong. What is the most appropriate thing to say or do at that given circumstance? Once you've done that inner reflection, do or say what you have to, without bothering about what others think or feel. The second part of the quote, of course, is a very beautiful play of words. Those who mind don't matter, and those who really matter to us will not mind. In fact, the question that we had last week on the show was partially about this, isn't it? We say things that we ought to, which sometimes hurts others. Is it always our responsibility to ensure that others don't get hurt at all? Yes, it is not always possible, right? I always think of Swami in this regard. If I have hurt someone, or I have done a mistake, or I may have said something wrong, but take Swami. He's perfect. He always did what is right and what is best for us. Didn't Swami still have detractors? Why, even we tend to get hurt by Swami's words and gestures at times. But that did not stop Swami from doing what had to be done in that moment. Hopefully, Swami considered our dissent as momentary and included us in the list of people who matter but don't mind, rather than those who mind but don't matter. Hopefully. So if the words and actions of Swami, the most perfect being, can hurt or bother others, what is that to be said about us? So the idea is to discriminate what is right and wrong. The opinion of others around, to an extent, helps us discover what is right and wrong. And invariably, the opinion that should be considered must be of those who really matter to us. Once we do that, then we should not bother about what the others would think of our words and actions. A further simplification of this would be, just please Swami, because no one else matters as much. Everything else will automatically fall into place. If we can ensure that Swami will not mind what we say or do, we can say nobody else matters, isn't it? So with that, let's head to the question for this week. But before that, permit me to read that quote by Bernard Baruch just one more time. I quote, "Be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind." This week's question, as I said, is a general one. It is from Brother Supreet from Mysore. It's a short one, so I'm going to be reading it out myself. Let's see what Brother Supreet has to ask from us. Saram Brother Prem, we have heard Swami saying we should give God priority number one in life. Even if it is number two, it is equivalent to not giving any priority at all. My question is, what does it mean to have God as our only priority in life? Also, how should my life be when I want to love Swami and make Him happy? Please throw some light on this. With love and regards, Supreet. So how to give Swami first priority? The second part of the question, of course, is how should my life be when I want to love Swami and make Him happy? Well, all I can say is that's all we do on the show. I mean, whatever we speak, whatever we are trying to convey, whatever thoughts that we've been sharing over these past many, many episodes, I think over 80 episodes, is all about that. How do we please Swami through our actions, through our words, through our decisions? But this particular question that he has brought up, how do you give first priority to Swami? And he's referring to a quote which says that we should give God priority number one, and even if it's a number two, it's not a priority at all. I'm not sure if Swami has said that very exact statement, but yes, the idea is more or less agreeable, that this is what Swami speaks of. That concept is quite agreeable. Swami would say it in different ways, of course. One of the ways which Swami would put it across is, the heart is a single-seater sofa. Either there is God or the world. Swami would say that it's not a musical chair that one sits for a while and then the other sits. I mean, that's what we most of the time do. Swami would say that, or you can't have it as both of them accommodated in the same seat. You choose who sits there. The other way Swami has conveyed this is he would use the acronym like JOY. Swami would say JOY stands for Jesus first, others next, and yourself last. Or Swami would say even the name Sai, where S stands for Swami first, A for all others next, and I last. And talking about the priority, one of the other places where we've often heard Swami say this is when Swami speaks about the Pandava brothers, the devotees of Lord Krishna. Swami would say that they always give priority to Krishna first, and that is why Krishna was always ready to do anything for them. And whenever Swami would speak about this, the way they gave priority and the way Lord Krishna responded to that, Swami would invariably narrate two Chanakathas, one of which is where Krishna carries the sandals of Draupadi when Draupadi is going to see Bhishma and get a boon from him so that he does not kill her husbands in the battle the next day. So at that time, Krishna takes her sandals and carries it, and you know, Bhishma looks at that and he's moved to tears, seeing that Krishna goes to any extent to serve the Pandavas. And Swami would say that's because the Pandavas gave priority to Krishna. So Krishna also responded likewise. The other beautiful story which Swami would often say is about sage Durvasa, who is enraged because one of the fruits that he's been waiting for, I mean, he's been doing tapas for one particular fruit, which is very special. And the Pandava brothers are in the forest and in search of food. They look at that fruit and they don't realize that that fruit is so special, so they bring it down. I think it's not Durvasa, I think it's Roma Rishi. That's what Swami would say. Roma Rishi has been doing penance for that particular fruit, and then this is what happens. Bhima brings the fruit down. So he's enraged. He comes there to literally curse the brothers, and that's when Krishna appears there. And Krishna tells them that this is what has happened, but I'm going to do something. Don't react to it. Just be as though nothing has happened. So as sage Rom Rishi comes there, what Krishna does is he goes and falls at the feet of the Pandava brothers. And this sage, he looks at Krishna, and for him Krishna is everything. You know, he recognizes Krishna as the universal being. And the moment he sees Krishna going and falling at the feet of the Pandavas, he feels that, oh, these might be some great beings, and he also comes and falls at their feet. Well, that's two interesting stories that Swami says, but the point I was trying to make is Swami would often say that the Pandava brothers were an example of devotees who gave first priority to Krishna. So yes, Swami does say that we have to give priority to Swamis. So what does Swami mean by that? What do you mean by saying that we need to give priority to God? It's very easy to follow this, or at least comparatively easy to follow this, if I could put it that way, when Swami is physically available, or God is physically available in a human form, or when something associated with Swami is there to hold on to. It becomes very easy. That decision of holding on to that priority is very easy. And that's what many of us did, right? People like me, or the people who are many of Swami's students who are working in the various organizations, many of the people, elderly people who have settled here, who are trying to serve Swami through the organizations, we've all taken to this choice because it was an expression of this idea that this way we can give priority to Swami. Right? There's so many examples of devotees. One of the oft-quoted example is that of Mr. Seshagiri Rao, the first pujari of the mandir. The first time when he came very reluctantly, and he comes and in the first glance of Swami, he has the vision of Lord Shiva. So he's a man who is still in service. He was working in Bangalore. So he decides not to go back at all. He says that I'm going to be here because I've seen my Lord. And there are many, many examples like that. A lot of people, a lot of elders have had this opportunity to, give up a lucrative career and come and settle in Parthi. And as soon as they got the opportunity, or as soon as their life permitted them to do that, take that decision, they immediately pounced on that, right? Of course, it is not that only people here in Prashanthi Nilayam or here in Swami's institutions have made the choice. Many, many make that choice. End of the day, I think it also calls for Swami's approval. Without Swami's approval, I don't think it happens. But that choice, that making the choice that I want to come and spend more time with Swami physically, or being associated with Swami's institutions as much as possible, I think that is probably a expression of that idea that I want to give priority to Swami. But again, without Swami's blessings, it doesn't happen. That's why I'm saying that it's not that only the people who are here in the ashram are people who are giving priority to Swami, even in the sense of associating with Swami's name. In fact, there is a elderly gentleman who lives in Prashanthi Nilayam, who lives in Puttaparthi now, and he came to Swami in, I think, maybe the 60s or 70s, and that was when he was in he was studying in college. Now, of course, he's settled with his family. This was a time when he was single, he was still studying in college, and Swami had called him for an interview with many others, and in the interview there was also a couple who were probably past their middle age, and this young boy also was there in the interview room. And in the course of that discourse and conversation that Swami was having, Swami was telling this elderly couple that, why are you still hanging around in the world outside? Swami is here. Why don't you wind up everything and come and settle here? This opportunity to live with Swami is there. Why don't you make use of that? Right? Swami was advising this couple like this. And that, what Swami was saying, went directly into the heart of this young boy who was sitting there. And he was so moved. He said, my God, this is what I should be doing. What Swami is saying there, telling this couple, is so much more applicable to me too. Why am I still hankering around a degree and a career and all of that? So in the interview room, this boy closes his eye and kind of makes a mental resolve that, Swami, I'm going to go back and wind up everything and come and settle in Parthi. So he's literally just wording that resolve in his mind. Swami, I hereby resolve, or I don't know what exactly was going on in his mind, or something like that he was about to say, he felt a sudden pat on his chest. And he opened his eye, and he was surprised in the interview room who's waking him up like this. And when he opened his eyes, Swami was standing right in front of him, and it was Swami who had tapped his chest. And Swami just looked at him and said, the time is not yet ripe for that. Literally, Swami you know, stopped him from making that resolve. And Swami said, no, it's not now. I will bring you when the time is right. And that's what Swami did. Many, many years later, after he had retired from his career and all of that, Swami allowed him to come and settle here. So one thing is, of course, the idea of giving priority to Swami appears more clear when I think God is in a form, or there are physical institutions or projects or certain tasks that can be clearly associated with Swami. And that's why the classic example of Arjuna having to make a choice between Krishna and Krishna's army, that was so very simple, because it's so easy to give priority to God when God is in a physical form or when it is in a cognizable entity in front of you, right? But the question is this giving priority to God? I think it is not. If it is not, then what is? If it is not, what is the worth of such decisions at all? Right? So this is what we'll try to look at. I always see it this way. When we look at ourselves, when we look at ourselves as individuals, I think we have two resources in our dispensation. And those two resources are the only things which really, really belong to us. The money and the wealth and the family and all of that, I don't think is really ours. As individuals, as human beings, I think we have only two resources in our control to give away, and that is time and energy. And we always have the choice of what we do with these two at any point in time. How are we going to spend our time, and where are we going to invest our energy or spend our energy in, right? Sometimes the choice becomes inevitable or easy to make because of the situation around or the circumstance that we are put in, right? Say when there is an emergency or when there's a crisis, I think it's easier or clearer what is the thing that we need to do. You expect to do it. You expect it to react in a certain way. You expect it to do a certain thing, right? It could be as simple as an exam that is approaching, or a target that has to be met in your workplace, or a crisis where someone in the family is suddenly unwell. You clearly know what you're supposed to do, right? For example, let's say that you're planning a vacation and someone falls seriously sick at home. The choice to cancel the vacation and attend to the sick person at home is very simple to make, because this activity is the need of the hour. This choice is time-bound, right? So when we're talking about time and energy as the resources that are in our disposal, and we are all the time making this choice of where we are going to use these two, when there is a critical situation, I think it becomes easier to decide, right? So when certain things are time-bound, I think that is the other point that I'm trying to make from here. When certain things are time-bound and it needs immediate attention, I think it's easier for us to decide that we need to invest our time and energy in that particular activity, right? Now, when Swami was physically present, right, Swami is always with us, but I'm talking about that very special opportunity of being physically, being in the physical proximity of the avatar, right? People like me who decided to settle here or thought that rather than working elsewhere, I should work for Swami and Swami's organizations. One thing was, we are acknowledging that Swami's presence was important, right? Without that, it doesn't happen. And we are also recognizing and acknowledging the fact that this is time-bound. This opportunity is time-bound. And being time-bound made that choice easier, right? It made it very easy to say that, no, Swami is here and I need to make use of this opportunity as long as it is available. So that made the choice quite easy to make. So it does not need the person to feel that, still it does need that person to feel that this is more important way to spend my life, right? If I have time and energy, I'm all the time looking at which is the best place to invest this time and energy. Where is, what should I do with this time and energy in such a manner that it gives importance to these two, right? So it comes from two things, that when I speak about the many people who wish to be associated with Swami's institutions or come and settle in Prashanthi Nilayam when Swami was here, or wanted to make use of this opportunity, even as students, rather than studying elsewhere, we'll study here, or rather than working elsewhere, we'll work for Swami. One is, the person acknowledges the magnitude of the opportunity and chooses that I rather do this than anything else. And the second thing is, of course, as I said, Swami's blessing and approval. Without that, it doesn't happen. Right, so even those, there could be many, many people who made this choice but Swami did not feel that it was yet the time, or Swami did not feel that, or Swami felt that their need was elsewhere, right? Nevertheless, this I feel is, even though I say that this is not what it is to give priority to Swami, this is only a situation that has created making this choice easy. It's still not giving priority to Swami. Nevertheless, this I feel is a very good first step to giving priority to Swami. So even for those who want to give priority to Swami at this point in time, and I'm not saying that come and settle in Bharti and that's the only way you can give priority to Swami, but acknowledge that it is special to be involved with anything that is associated with Swami. Then give some time and energy to that particular activity or that particular institution. It could be anything as simple as attending bhajans on a weekly basis, going to study circles, or being a part of some service activity that the local center or the samiti is doing, or it could be as simply as visiting Prashanta Nilayam on a regular basis. So anything that you associate with Swami physically, giving your time and energy to that in a regular basis is probably one of the ways by which you are, one, acknowledging that this opportunity is important, and by acknowledging it, you are giving it more priority or giving it more importance, right? So any activity associated with Swami or something that you can say, I am doing this for Swami, or because Swami wants us to do this, I am doing this. Do more of that by giving your time and energy to that particular activity. So why is doing this important? I think this way we will be reiterating to ourselves that Swami is important to me. And more importantly, when I say that we are reiterating to ourselves, looking at it from the spiritual point of view, what we are doing is we are showing our own mind that this particular activity is important to me because it is associated with Swami. So one, choose these activities, whatever I said, whatever works for you, whatever you feel that this is associated with Swami and I need to give time to this, choose that over other things whenever possible. On a weekend, rather than being elsewhere, you choose to be in a bhajans in the samiti, or you have an extended weekend and you say that I'll spend this extended weekend in Prashanta Nilayam, or whatever way in which you feel that the activity I'm doing or the place where I'm spending my time and energy is associated with Swami. So one is you're choosing this over other activities. And the second point is keep aside sometimes for such activities. It could be on a weekly basis or in a day or on a daily basis, and treat it as uncompromisable. If I decide that I have to go for bhajans every weekend or every day or whatever is the frequency that you choose, or attend this medical camp once a month, stick to that discipline as much as possible. The moment you say that I'm doing this activity and no other activity can come and take this activity away, you're automatically giving so much importance to that activity. And that activity could be very, very simple. In fact, there's this very, very hilarious particular conversation which one of the elders once shared. this person came to Swami much later than the other people in the institution. I think he became a lecturer in a university or something. But this person was a spiritual aspirant. He came to Swami because he felt that this would help him progress faster on the spiritual path. So he came here and he was always thinking about sadhana and meditation and all of that. So he went up to one of the lecturers and he asked him this question. So, sir, how's your sadhana progressing? And what sadhana are you doing? And how's your sadhana progressing? And the reply that he got from this lecturer really stunned him. Because this lecturer told him, he said, what sadhana are you talking about, sir? There is no time for sadhana. I don't have time even to shave. Where is the question of doing sadhana? I am not endorsing the idea of what that lecturer was saying, but what he was saying actually was a very subtle point. This lecturer was telling that, if you're saying that I don't have time for shaving, where is the time for sadhana? It means you're giving more importance to shaving rather than sadhana. Putting it that way, it appears like a very wrong statement to make. But if you look at it, when we were in Swami's presence, the idea of having a well-groomed face, well-groomed appearance in front of Swami was as much a sadhana than anything else, because this activity became so closely associated with Swami. because every morning we had to go and sit in the mandir and we had to be spick and span, and especially if you're a lecturer, Swami expects higher standards from you. If you're a student, Swami expects a certain standard from you. So that small activity of probably shaving every day becomes associated with Swami, and that becomes uncompromisable. That I would rather do this than probably going and doing some sadhana of any kind of sitting in meditation. So when there's a choice, I choose this. So the idea of taking anything that's associated with Swami and making it uncompromisable is actually one of the important things. So if you're giving a certain amount of time and saying that I'm doing this because it's associated with Swami, or I'm doing this for Swami, I wake up in the morning and I do meditation for half an hour, or you say that I go for Nagar Sankirtan, or once a week I go for this. So no other activity will take away that particular time that you're keeping aside for Swami. So one thing is, choose to do a certain activity over other activities. That way you are giving importance to that activity and you are telling your mind that this is important, Swami is important to me. The second thing is, make that activity or that time that you're giving for that activity uncompromisable. Nothing else can come and take that away. Sometimes in the course of when we choose to do something like this or attend bhajans or go for service, sometimes we may feel that, you know, I don't feel that same feeling in this. I don't experience that same bhavam that I had when I initially started this. When I first went for bhajans, it was so nice, it was so blissful. Now it is becoming like a routine. I'm not able to enjoy it so much, right? Even if that feeling is there, I would say that it's all right. Still stick to it. Probably you can pray to Swami to give you the same joy and that same feeling, and pray to Swami that, Swami, why am I not feeling the same way? Please give it to me. But still stick to the activity, even though that emotion behind that activity, that feeling, that bhavam has gone away. See, if I'm sick, let's say that I'm unwell and the doctor gives me medicine, there's no question of whether I like the medicine or not, right? I take the medicine because that medicine is important for me. Similarly, when we stick to a discipline, when we stick to disciplines such as any of these activities, even when the mind sometimes seems not to enjoy it, when you say that, no, I will still stick to this because this is important to me, I think you're sending a very strong message to your own mind saying that, you know, I'm not doing this for your joy. I'm doing this because this is the right thing to do and this is what Swami expects of me, right? Of course, there's another reason why it's very important. I mean, this is a very, very important thing to do. There's another reason which I'll touch upon as we are going forward in the answer. So all of this is still not giving priority to Swami. Or rather, putting it the way that you had framed the question, if you're not giving the top priority to Swami, you're not giving priority at all. So all of this, what I said about giving time and energy and giving it, making that uncompromisable, you ensure that whatever happens, you stick to those disciplines. Even if you don't enjoy it, you do it. All of this is also still not giving top priority to Swami. What we're actually doing is, you know, in everyday life, we all have a list of priorities based on what we think is important to our life, right? When we are doing all of these activities that I spoke in the last few minutes, we are only consciously pushing Swami up in that list of priorities, right? Anybody's life, you could be a devotee of Swami, you don't have to be a devotee of Swami. All of us have priorities in life. We prioritize between the needs of our family, the work that we have in our office, or all of that. We prioritize based, on an everyday basis. We say that, okay, this task is important. And as I said, when there are critical situations or when there's a crisis, then certain priorities, I mean, the priority list kind of gets reshuffled, right? So we all have these priorities, and only when we are doing all of these things that I just mentioned sometime back, we are only pushing Swami up in that list of priorities. We are still not taking him right on top and making him priority number one. The moment we make him priority number one, it's a different scenario altogether, which we'll come to. But we are only pushing Swami up in the priority list. But still, even then, I think this is a very, very good beginning. You cannot take this away. The reason why I'm saying that we are still not giving Swami the top priority is, all of this, I think we are still doing for our own sake. More or less, I think we can say that. We are doing all of these activities for our own sake. When I said that, you know, we came to Swami as youngsters, or many devotees came to Swami in the peak of their career and they decide to stay on, what were they actually doing? We were actually acknowledging that Swami is divine and Swami is a very special thing to be with Swami. But we were actually saying that this is the best thing that I can do with my time and energy. Which means I'm still saying that this is the best thing for me. This is the best that can happen to my life, right? I want this opportunity to be close to Swami because this is the best investment I can make with my time and money, right? I hope you're following what I'm saying. That yes, this opportunity was very grand. Yes, this opportunity was very special. But we were literally saying that I want to treat myself with this opportunity which is so special. So is the opportunity more important or am I more important? I think invariably all of us were wanting to be near Swami or wanting to choose to do anything that was associated with Swami because we felt that that was the right thing to do for my life, for that was the best reward I can give to myself or is the best investment I can do with my time and money, right? It's as much as any other investment that you do, you have a certain amount of money and you're going to the stock market and you find that there's a company which is doing really well, you put your money there. It does not mean that that company has become the be-all and end-all of your life. It's become the priority number one and it's become the most important thing in your life. You are still thinking that company is good. I'm putting my money there so that I will benefit out of it, right? So when we do the same thing with our time and energy and we are investing it in Swami, Swami-related institutions, Swami-related activities, we are actually only being smart. We are only being as intelligent as we can be, right? And many, many people who are involved in Swami's work also do it with a certain attitude. It says, I'll do Swami's work and Swami will do my work, right? Again, it is not wrong. It's any day better to be involved in good activities and noble activities rather than just going about with our mundane life, right? But this is not really giving the single seater so far to Swami as we started off by saying. That's why this is not the be all and end all of it, right? Many years ago, I had heard this beautiful incident which was narrated by one of our lecturers. This was about a visiting faculty who had, I think he's still a visiting faculty in our university. He comes and teaches the students of the business administration program. During the 70th or 75th birthday, I'm not sure which one day he had come for darshan during the weekend and Swami came up to him and Swami asked him that, will you be coming for Swami's 70th birthday? And this devotee got up and said, yes, Swami, definitely I'll be here for Swami's birthday. I wouldn't miss that for anything. So Swami said, very happy. Swami told him, bring all your family. Come with all your family. And Swami, very excitedly, Swami told him that because Swami is going to give Vishwarupa Darshan during this birthday. And we all know that Swami would refer to those moments when there was an ocean of devotees in front of Swami. Swami would say that, you know, this is literally like Vishwarupam, where all of these beings are nothing but bodies that are containing the divinity, and it's literally what the Purusha Sukham says, as the Shirsha Purusha, that, you know, Swami is there and around him all of these people. Swami would speak of that as the Vishwarupa Darshan. So whatever it is, Swami came and told this devotee that, come with all your family, I will be giving you the Vishwarupa Darshan, right? So this devotee was, of course, very excited. He went back and he was making plans. And all of a sudden, he got a call from one of the members in his extended family who told him that, you know, we have fixed the marriage of our son or daughter, whatever it was, or whoever it was. He said, we have fixed the marriage of so-and-so, and it's on 23rd November, right on Swami's birthday. And this person was in a fix now. So he didn't know what to do. He was saying that this marriage was very, very important, and he had to attend it. Although his heart was with Swami and he wanted to come for Swami's birthday celebrations, he had to be in that marriage. So he was literally torn between these two. And eventually he decided that he'll go for the wedding because, you know, sometimes when you're put in situations like this, you think, who's the person who's going to be more understanding? You can expect Swami to be more understanding than the relatives who expect you to do a certain thing, right? So you kind of compromise Swami and you say, okay, anyway, Swami will understand. Swami, you know, Swami, like the quote that I started off with, those who mind will not matter and those who matter will not mind. Swami matters and so he will not mind, right? So we tend to think that we rather do this and Swami will be understanding. So that's the decision this gentleman came to. He said, all right, I'll attend the meeting. And one day, one night, he has this dream in which Swami comes and Swami holds his hand and Swami takes him into a huge mansion. So he's seeing this dream where he's walking into this huge mansion with Swami. And Swami tells him that, you know, you look at this mansion, there are many, many rooms in this mansion. And Swami tells him, you know what? This mansion is your heart. This mansion represents your heart. And Swami goes on to tell him, there are plenty of rooms in this mansion. One of the rooms is for your family, you know, your wife and your children. There is another room which is for your extended family, or probably your uncles and aunts and cousins and all of the others. Swami said, the other room is for your career. One more room is there for, you know, your other activities. And Swami went on describing each one of the rooms. Swami said, it's for different people. And then Swami said, among all these other rooms, there is one more room. And Swami said, you're given that room to Swami. Swami said, that is the priority that you're giving me. You've given rooms to everybody and you have given me just another room. Swami told, if this is how you will approach Swami, this is how Swami will respond to you too. And he woke up from this dream, he was startled by it, and I mean, after that the decision is very clear to make, right? The choice is not very difficult. He immediately called up his family and said, I'm going nowhere, I'm going to Parthi for Swami's birthday celebrations. But the point that Swami was making was very, very important. You might give the best room in that mansion to Swami. You might give the room with the best view to Swami in that mansion. And you could probably be spending more time in that room too, right? You have a huge mansion, but you still choose to spend more time. Or whenever you have free time, you go and sit in that room. But still, it is only a room in the mansion, right? You have not given the entire mansion to Swami, and that is what Swami was referring to, right? So that is why I'm saying that even though you give the best of your time and energy to Swami, even though you push Swami up in this priority list, it is still not giving Swami the top priority. It is still like you giving the best room in your mansion of your heart to Swami. It is not equivalent to giving your whole heart to Swami. Till now I only spoke about time and energy and giving time and energy to Swami, but there's another important aspect which literally goes without saying, which is what this whole program is about, which is the importance that we give to Swami's message, right? And what Swami likes and dislikes, isn't it? That's very, very important. Swami would say that there's no point in saying that, oh, I love Swami so much, Swami is so important to me, Swami is my world, Swami is everything to me, and then you don't obey Swami, you don't take Swami's word seriously. And when I say that obeying Swami, it's not about perfect obedience. It's not like I come to Swami and I become Swami's devotee and from the next day I'm a new leaf. It's not possible. The mind does not change like that. But even if that effort to please Swami, and even if we are channelizing all our energy in trying to obey Swami, I think even that is good enough. I think most of us don't do that. We kind of accept our follies and we just, you know, we say, oh, I'm like that. You know, I have this problem, but that's how it is. But at least, you know, it's not about just giving importance to Swami. Giving importance to Swami without giving importance to Swami's word will take us nowhere, right? So after we come to Swami, just as we try and give more time and energy to things associated with Swami, I think more of the choices that we make in life must also be governed by Swami's message. It goes without saying. Like what we were speaking about in this afternoon's satsang, where, you know, you kind of do things with the feeling, with this question always in your mind, will this please Swami? Will this please Swami? And instead of satisfying many, many people around, instead of even satisfying your own self, you're only endeavoring to satisfy Swami, right? So I said, we should give our time and energy to Swami. It's still not necessarily giving Swami the priority. But we are just being smart because this is probably the best thing that we can do with our life. Similarly, even following Swami's instructions and message could possibly be the smartest thing to do, isn't it? Because when we acknowledge that Swami is divine, when we acknowledge that Swami is the creator of this entire universe, we say Brahmanda Nayaka Baba, we say that Tribhuvana Palaka, and you know, in our bhajans we sing all of that. We say that, oh, you're the one who's created this entire universe, you're the maker of the whole cosmos, you know, you've created me and everything. So when you acknowledge that, it goes without saying that you follow what Swami says is the best way to do, to solve your problem, the best way to do in a certain situation, right? It goes without saying. I mean, he's the creator of the thing. The user manual is best taken from him rather than anybody else, right? So even when I'm obeying Swami till the last word, it could still not mean that I am not giving the top priority to Swami. That's a bit scary, isn't it? You know, how do you then give priority to Swami if you're not giving your best time and energy to Swami, if you're following Swami's word to the last word, following Swami's message to the last word, letter? It's still not giving priority to Swami, then what more do you do, right? Because when we choose to obey Swami rather than obey others, or for that matter, even obey our mind, we are only giving importance and, as I said, we are just raising him in that list of priorities. He's still not there in the top one. So before I move to the last section where I'm finally going to tell you what it is, what I think is giving priority to Swami based on what Swami has said, all of this, what we've been talking about, we must do. There are no arguments about that. We must give time to Swami. The time that we give Swami should be uncompromisable. We must obey Swami, and our obedience should be based on our faith. And when I say faith, it means that even if all others don't agree, even if it does not appear that appear like the most logical and rational and intelligent thing to do for others and for ourselves, we must still do it, right? We should do all of this. There's no doubt about that. But still, this is not what Swami says is giving top priority to Swami. Once when Swami was in the portico and he was talking to some of the staff, the teachers and students there, and I don't recall what was the context in which Swami made this. I think Swami was talking about how you can win Swami's grace and what are the different ways you can win Swami's grace. And in the course of that conversation, Swami made this remark, which was very startling. Swami said, Swami asked one of the lecturers who had come after giving up a career in the corporate. Swami asked him, you know, you work in your company. There are two kinds of employees in your company, right? There are permanent employees, there are temporary employees. So Swami was asking him, what is the difference between the two? So he said, Swami, temporary employees, you know, come on a temporary basis. They offer their service and go, but permanent employees are in the payroll and they get different benefits. So Swami was asking, what is the benefit, difference in the benefits they get? And he went on to say that, Swami, the temporary employees are only paid based on the services they offer. But the permanent employees get a lot of other perks, like, you know, there's gratuity, there's pension, and there's TA and DA. So he was telling him that travel allowance, dearness allowance, and all of that he was saying. And there is also pension after that person retires. So then Swami went on to say, exactly, even among devotees, there are two categories. There are part-time devotees and there are full-time devotees, right? I'm sorry, Swami did not use the word permanent and temporary employees. Swami is using the words part-time employees and full-time employees. So the same phrase Swami uses for devotees, and Swami says there are part-time devotees and there are full-time devotees. Part-time devotees are paid for whatever they do. You know, you go and sit for a bhajan, you go and participate in a service activity, you will get that benefit, right? They are, at the end of the day, they're all good karma, and good karma always has its good consequences. And so Swami said, you'll be paid for whatever you do. You'll be given a remuneration for that. And Swami said, but if you become a full-time devotee, Swami went on to say, you know, I give nearness and dearness allowance. Instead of saying TADA, Swami said, I give nearness and dearness allowance. And Swami said, you have insurance cover, health insurance cover. And Swami said, not only that, even after you retire, Swami said, you will get a pension and my pension will come to you even after this life for many, many lifetimes after that too. Right? So Swami was saying this, and Swami then, you know, looked at everybody seated there, and Swami said, but all of you are only part-time devotees. All of you are only part-time devotees. And as I said, that included a lot of Swami's students who had decided to stay in Swami's ashram and work. That included a lot of people who were in the peak of their career, who gave up their career and came and settled down here. All of these people, and probably even in the devotees, there must have been some people who had given up their jobs, and they said that I just want to be in Swami's presence. So Swami points at all of them and said that you're all part-time devotees. So what is this to be a full-time devotee? And Swami added an interesting quip to that. Swami said, but you don't realize that to be a full-time devotee is actually far more easier than being a part-time devotee. So what was that explanation that Swami gave? We'll come to that in a short bit, because that's probably the crux of the answer. So whatever I do for Swami, right, still I am the most important person in the equation, right? That's what I'm trying to put forth in whatever I've been saying. Whatever I do, I am the most important person. I feel that this is the best use of my time. This is the best use of my energy. And I'm saying that this is the best instruction I can follow. Right? We are all the time saying that I'm doing this because this is best for me. So which means the most important person in that equation is myself. So all of this I do only because it is good for me. Right? And we often use this phrase, whatever Swami does is good for me, whatever Swami says is good for me. So eventually we are only doing all of this because it's good for me. To really give Swami the first place is try to do what Swami wants us to do, whatever I've been saying all this while, not because it is good for me, not because I will benefit in some way, but because this is what Swami expects and I do it as my offering to Swami. So all that I said about giving time to Swami, committing to that time, trying to live all Swami's message, all of this still holds good. But now you will do it only out of your love for Swami as your offering. Not because it is good for you, not because it's good for me, not even because it makes me feel good, right? That's why I said that sometimes that joy, it keeps coming and going, that it's basically emotion, right? When I'm sitting for bhajan, sometimes I'm crying, sometimes I'm so elated, I'm so connected, sometimes you're so lost, you're not thinking of Swami at all, right? But if you still stick to that and say that, no, this is what Swami expects of me and this is my offering to Swami, you're literally telling your mind, please keep quiet. I'm not doing this because it makes you happy or makes you feel nice. I'm doing this because I'm doing it for Swami, right? The next question probably is, so what is the true sign that I'm doing it as an offering for Swami and I'm not doing it because this is the best thing for me, right? When anything unpleasant happens in life, when we're going through a difficult situation, when we're going through a crisis, when you're going through something which is not something that we are pleasant, we are happy to have in our life, I will not say that, Swami, I did so much for you. I tried following all your words. You know, I always obeyed whatever you said. And this is what you give me in return. The moment this thought comes, then I have not done what I did as an offering to Swami, but I've done it with the idea that this is a give and take. And when I say this, I did so much for you, what are you doing in return for me? I am demanding remuneration for what I've done. It's not an offering anymore, right? Swami would give this example of this devotee, Bhadrachalam Ramdas. You know, Swami would say this in his discourses, that there's one kirtana which Ramdas sings, and this is something which he composed when he was in the prison, when the Tanisha had imprisoned him for all the money that the Tanisha thought that he had embezzled. And when he was being given all these whiplashes, Ramdas, you know, cries out to Rama. And at some point, he's very, very upset with Rama. So Swami says that one kirtana, he says that, you know, I built such a beautiful temple with a beautiful enclosure for you. You know, I put a necklace around you, and that the cost of that necklace is 10,000 gold coins. I made a necklace for Lakshmana, and that's worth 10,000 gold coins. I made this particular jewel for Mother Sita, and that's worth so many thousand gold coins. Right, and he says that I've done all of this, and then at the end of it, you're seeing me suffer like this. And, you know, very beautifully he says, Yavarabba Sommani Ramachandra. He says, whose father's property it is that you are enjoying? Me Tandri Dasharatha Maharaju Pettana. Ikani Mama Janaka Maharaju Pampena. He says, has it been given by your father Dasharatha, or has it been sent to you as, you know, as a gift by your father-in-law Janaka? He says, I have done all of this. I have given you all of this. Right? But that's the beauty. Swami would say that in that anger, in that pain, he cries out like this, but being such a great devotee that he is, the very next line in that very song, he repents for what he says. He says, Appa, forget the Telugu part of it. He says that, pardon me, Ramachandra, don't be upset with me for what I've said. Don't take what I said to heart. I blamed you because I was not able to bear these beatings that I'm being given. In that pain, I cried out to you, but who else will come and save me other than you? He says, you know, don't come to me because I've done all of this to you. Just come to me because I want you. I want you to come and embrace me, right? So Swami would say this. When he comes to this conclusion, that's how Swami will put it in the discourse. The moment he repents like this, Swami says that Ramachandra says, Lord Rama says, come, let's go and save this person, right? So the whole idea of giving priority to Swami is, yes, this is important to me because it's associated with Swami. I'm going to give my time and energy to it. This is what Swami asked me to do. I'm going to do it, come what may. But we disconnect what we do for Swami and what happens in our life, right? In fact, we will start looking forward to such moments when there is a difficulty, when there is a challenge, because such is the time that we know the flaws that are in us and that are in our devotion, and we can correct it, right? So such life situations will become opportunities for us to grow in devotion, opportunities to probably check our own surrender. And we will look forward to such opportunities, and many, many times when we are in that state, we will find that we are faring much better than we thought we would fare in a situation like that, right? And I feel that it is at this stage that Swami truly becomes the top priority. How? Because till now we wanted a good life. We wanted a noble life for ourselves. We wanted the best in life. So that is why we came to Swami. We wanted to secure that, right? In other words, we were using Swami to achieve the best in the world for ourselves. But at this point, when I say that I'm doing whatever I'm doing, I'm supposed to do, I'm doing it, and I'm doing it only as an offering to Swami, at this point, when we start looking at even difficulties and happiness in life as only a means to move closer to Swami, we start using the world and the situations in the world around us to achieve Swami. Right? From using Swami to achieve the world, we actually graduate to the point where we use the world to achieve Swami. So this is really when Swami becomes the top priority. It's not me anymore. Right? We will still lead a good life, we will pursue our careers, we'll take care of our family as we are supposed to. But now all of these activities becomes a means of moving closer to Swami. It's a form of offering to Swami, right? So in conclusion, what happens when I look at both success and failure, pain and pleasure, and not only accept pain and pleasure, pain and difficulties, but I'm in fact looking forward to them, right? So what happens when I'm looking at life situations like this? I become more equanimous, right? That's what happens. We'll become more equanimous towards whatever happens in life. Now, going back to that particular conversation in the portico where Swami said that all of you are part-time devotees, and Swami said full-time devotion is far more easier than part-time devotion. Swami said a full-time devotee is one who is equanimous at all times. A full-time devotee is one who accepts all that happens in his life or her life as Swami's prasadam. So this is really what the answer is. I mean, I could have probably given this answer right in the beginning. So what is it to give priority to Swami? This is what it is. This is what Swami has said. But it does not mean that the rest of it is not important, right? The whole journey is not important. Because yes, we give importance to Swami, we slowly raise him in the priority list, but at some point, I wouldn't even say that these are two steps. We are all in this stage and we go there. We are probably going back and forth in this, But at some point, we are at that stage where Swami's top priority. I'm not bothered about the pain I'm undergoing. I'm not bothered about the insults I'm having. I'm not bothered about all the difficult things which are happening. You know, I will still do what is right. I will still do what is expected of me from Swami, but I'm doing it as an offering to Swami, right? So this is really devotion. It's because Swami chose to put it as part-time and full-time devotion, but this is really devotion. Because in the letter that Swami wrote to his brother way back in 1947, it's an epochal letter. We always go back to that as Swami's mission statement, right? In that, Swami says, Manchi cheddalu kuda manasulo samamuga bhavinchuchundate bhakti naku. He says to consider good and bad, pleasant and unpleasant as the same, as equal. Swami says, samamuga bhavinchuchundate bhakti naku. He says to consider that as equal is my definition of devotion, right? So Swami has put it very, very clearly. So at that point when we are doing all of this, we're giving importance to Swami. I mean, all of that decision, I think it depends on the situations we are in. As I said, it also depends on what Swami has chosen for us, whether he approves of our certain decisions that we make of coming and probably, you know, settling in Parthi, or I want to come and work in Swami's institution. That's a different thing. But whatever we take, it is not because it's the right thing for me or I'm doing it because it's good for me. It's a good tool to use. Swami would himself say that surrender is nothing but saying that whatever happens is good for me. It's a good tool to silence the mind, right? That's why it is so important. But at some point we say that it doesn't matter whether it's good for me or not. I'm not looking at that part of the statement at all. What Swami wants me to do, I do. What I can, and I'm constantly making this effort. It's not that constant effort is always there. I'm always trying to please Swami with my own actions. And I'm doing all of this purely as an offering to Swami. And probably I'll just end with this last thing. And what will happen in this is that confidence that Swami will have that, you know, this devotee will understand and accept whatever I do for this devotee. I think that confidence, you know, I started speaking about the Pandavas. I said Swami would often say the Pandavas gave priority to Krishna, and that's why Krishna responded likewise. When Krishna goes as a messenger of the Pandavas to the Kaurava court to bring a peace dealing between the warring factions, he finally says that, you know, you forget the kingdom, don't give us the kingdom, don't give us what is rightfully ours, you give us 5 villages. And, you know, Krishna says with confidence, you know, I'm brokering this peace, I'm making this offer. What is acceptable to me is acceptable to the Pandavas, and I guarantee that. That is the confidence that, you know, Swami should have in us. He's saying that, no, I can send any difficulties in the way of this devotee. He will understand me. She will understand me. She will accept me. Right? And that will happen only when we don't bother whether, I mean, in what way is this good for me? Is this really good for me? How is this good for me? I don't bother about all of that. I say that if Swami has chosen this, it's acceptable to me. I think that is when Swami becomes the first priority. And then after that, everything that happens in life is only a means to achieve Swami or secure Swami more. Rather than we are coming to Swami to secure our happiness in the world, we will use the world to secure Swami in our life. I think that's when we are giving top priority to Swami. That's when Swami takes the whole mansion of the heart. So thank you, Brother Supreet, for asking that question. I hope I have satisfactorily answered your question. There probably may be many ways of putting across this answer. I felt that this is the most appropriate, and this is the answer that I resonate with. So that's why I thought I'll share it with you. Thank you for asking that question. If you have anything more to ask, as always, feel free to write to me at prem@radiosaya.org. So with that, dear listeners, it's time for me to wrap up this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. Do you have a question like this? And I rather prefer practical questions, because these are very general. It's always nice to have situational questions and see what Swami would expect us to do in that. If you have a question like that, feel free to send it across to me. I invite questions to my personal mail ID. That's prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. If you wish to be anonymous, you can let me know. It's my personal mail ID, so the mails are confidential nevertheless. If you can record your own question and send it across to me, it would be wonderful. It's always nice to have a different voice once in a while in the program. We spoke about the great devotee Bhadrachalam Ramdas. I'm going to leave you with a kirtana that is written by him, a beautiful song. On the other side of it, you'll have the last segment of the day, the Vahini Satsang. But I'll join you all next week at 7:30 p.m. for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet.
Ramamayam, ee jagamanta Ramamayam.